once you get a taste of the impossibility of yourself, then, you know, you could argue that that commences the big unraveling. And we get tastes of it, you know, that peppers our entire so-called life history. How many of those, you know, moments we remember is, you know, impossible to say. But the evidence of the unconditioned nature of experience is always poignantly, generously, if not assertively, present. And you could say consciousness has the curious capacity to enter into a self-obscuring conundrum with itself that can look like the duration, the durability, the meaning, the disappointments of what we would call the sine wave of my life. And so that it becomes the frame, this transient and ephemeral imagination suggests strongly that there's something going on here, and you know what it is, and it happens to be occurring to the likes of you. And so everything falls into place on the football field of, you know, how you bring the ball forward and back and measure the achievements and the joys and the disappointments and the regrets and the successful revenges that you've, you know, had or will continue to have.
Well, is that consciousness or is that part of consciousness? I mean, how would you like
to... Yeah, there's no part. I mean, even consciousness is a myth. So to suggest something is a part of consciousness is likewise a myth. You can only parse the apparitional nature of experience through hypnosis. Otherwise, it's not parsable. Right? So a sense of self as a durable creature riding the waveforms of one's life, including, you know, desires and the things accomplished and acquired and memory and everything that accompanies, you know, what you would call the pageantry of your experience. Every single morsel or drop of that is a transient hallucination.
Transient daydreaming, that was a good...
Yeah.
It's a good thing. Good way of describing it.
Yeah.
Daydream believer. Didn't you do a post on daydream believer?
Yeah. Yeah.
Daydream believer, that's a good one.
As the confidence and insistence that we place on the imaginary sine wave of a transient identity starts to wear off, then the, you know, the urgencies to suffer less, or dare I say, accomplish enlightenment, change. The investment in the imaginary outcome, the deliverable, changes. Because if we start from a, let's say, a position of self-convinced malnourishment, then we are highly motivated to secure and participate in a remedy. But what happens if you start catching more frequent and depthful glimpses of your unencumbered nature? Then the motivators for remedy have to abate necessarily. Now, it's not because you succeeded at anything or something responded to your will or the universe threw you a bone. That's not how it happens. It happens because self-reflection yields the non-dual spontaneity of nourishment itself. So, therefore, the imagination of being on the short end of the stick abates. Becomes smaller, less loud, less demanding.
I love it. I wonder about the plethora of hot dog stains at the edge of the black hole of vendors selling you a special path to it. I mean, it just seems crazy that people would seem to be there would be something palpable that they've discovered, and then they turn around and market it. So, you know, I just don't understand how that can be and how there could be so few that really seem to me to have some. Well, maybe it's just because I'm looking at the celebrities, you know. I'm looking at those that we all talk about all the time that sell books and stuff.
Well, I think
like
it's
that.
Everybody. It's real easy to convince, well, for this to convince itself that it did something in a very simplified sort of, to simplify it and be like, no, it's because I did this and this that happened or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And then want to tell someone about it.
This is an ongoing, unapologetic shitstorm of fantasy. So even at the precipice of the black hole, there's going to be a lot of booths.
Yeah.
Even there will be many, many booths. Yeah. Because it is a shitstorm, unrelenting shitstorm of fantasy.
That's all it is. So.
Yes, you could say that's all it is. Yeah. Because as you pierce the veil of all that it is as a shitstorm of unrelenting fantasy, you can't really say what the opposite of that is.
No, that's why I like the transient daydreaming, because it's not like, oh, there's daydreaming, there's not daydreaming. It's like, that's all this is transient daydreaming. It's just, that's it.
Yep.
Anything that you have to say about it is transient daydreaming. Anything that fits in it is transient.
Right.
If you're sitting there in the park and you're just kind of taking in a tree.
Hanging with Eckert on the bench.
Yeah, okay. I mean, would that be transient daydreaming?
Everything's transient daydreaming.
I mean, you're just being with the tree.
You're a daydream.
Well,
tree's a daydream.
It's really...
that you're doing something with the tree is definitely daydreaming.
It's really too strange. You have at your disposal the power of this awareness, the power of this metaphor creation, the power of hypothetical circumstances and events and sentiments, like the conjuring of one sitting in a park being with a tree conjures, you know, an image of what that might look like. Or I can either see someone else sitting on that bench, or I can even kind of place myself on that hypothetical bench being with what we call a tree, right? But isn't that just the present expression of metaphoric imagination?
Oh, yeah.
So that's all this has, is the present expression of metaphoric imagination. Oh. If there's a thing, which is already too strange, right? A truth, a deliverable, a revelation, even an enlightenment. Fuck it, an enlightenment even. If there is that, well, is that outside the field of metaphoric imagination? Is it one and the same as metaphoric imagination without clinging, sans clinging?
I mean, there might be metaphoric hallucination or whatever you want to call imagination beyond that, but there's still just that.
Well,
I mean, I guess there is still just that, no matter what, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like...
like if there wasn't that, and then there is that.
Yeah, it's not like you can point to, you know, a body of thought and say, oh, wrong, right. And then an oppositional or yeah. complementary body of thought and go, right. Because either one would suggest, you know, a destination, a comparison, an accusation in the midst of the nonstop right expression of this imaginarium, pointing to something as being true or untrue or correct or incorrect. And mind, meaning spoken rumination, thought, speech, mind, what the fuck? I don't know what any of this is, but as spoken rumination, using, metaphoric wiffle balls to try to conjure or suggest a durable, representational, satisfactorily predictable reality is not possible. It's not possible. Though, you could say, egoic enterprise is absolutely sure that it is possible, and then so dwells in metaphoric hallucination with verve.
Hey, tell me about it.
It's funny.
Go tell it on the mountain.
I'm going to tell this story because it's kind of really, it's just funny.
Yeah.
I get woken up this morning by a text by someone I walk dogs for, like, can you go to my house because I think I left the iron on. I'm like, whatever, I'll go to your house. I'll be like super yeah. person going to investigate a great crow and iron mystery or
right.
whatever. So I get out of bed, drive over there to check on this stupid iron that this girl is wearing about all day.
Yeah.
It's just unplugged. Nothing, it's totally off.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. And nice. She's like, I constantly do this thing where I can't remember if I turned it, like this happens all the time, and I've never once left it actually on.
But she's always concerned that she may have.
That she may have. It's yeah. just funny.
She should talk to Dave Letterman
like
about that.
You can't even remember, you know, the mind can't even remember if it left the iron plugged in or not.
Yeah. Well, she might.
Everything is automatic.
Well, she might have a touch of that kind of OCD, which
everybody does.
Yeah. Always, you know, can't remember whether the iron or the oven or the hair dryer or the faucet or whatever was left, you know, on.
But that's
well,
how mine is funny
kind of,
because
yeah.
that's how
if
mine
only
is.
It is kind of OCD where
and
you
it's
check
like,
five times, then she would be okay.
No, because you would still wouldn't be able to remember.
She'd
I've done
be
it.
Concerned.
I'm like, I've done it.
Yeah.
You would still be concerned.
That's the painful loop for that kind of ailment, if we can refer to it as that. Where no matter how many times you try to secure confidence that it is a certain way,
you
your
can't.
Mind will rebound, and you can't be sure.
That happens all the time. It's really funny, like
yeah.
a lot. And it's just, yeah, it's funny. Just, I don't know. Just like,
well, this is the
you're making plans. You know, that girl probably has plans for 100 years into her future. And you know, it's like a.
This is a valuable yogic tool. Which is to examine for fun or consider for fun the viability or verifiability of your memory and see how curious it is that the movement of thought and reference and transient imagination and hypotheticals and arbitrary projection suggests a durable, verifiable reality when there is
I think that's
no
what the OCD is.
Such thing.
I mean, because that's like how I operated apparently half my life, but it's like that you just are trying to verify something that's not verifiable and you can't. So it's like an OCD that
yeah.
kicks in.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Well, that would be you know, in that occurring, let's say, in a constructive manner, as contrasted with an OCD
right,
manner,
where you have to harass someone out of bed to get
would be
something for you.
You know, a curious revelation. this moment, were there one, I mean, how do you even reflect on a moment? Do you have to be later than the moment to look back at the moment? And if you try to consider the present moment,
and it's all too late, isn't it?
Yes, it is all too late. And yet, if there were reality, it can't be anything but perfectly present. So, or without time.
Yeah.
Hi. So we can have both, you know, the observation that, oh, fuck, I'm always late. Because once you've gone referential, what you're referring to is not present anymore.
Or way too early, where you're trying to, you think you've got a
you could be
kind of handle on the future.
Yes, it could look that way too.
How things are going to unfold. And
yes, and yet, all that appears to be appearing can only be on time. So it's, I mean, it's a little bit paradoxical that this can only be on time, have no duration, and yet the reflex for referential consideration of it is always late, but wait.
So that's on time just like everything else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure it is. Yeah, hallucination.
It's not what you think it is.
Hallucination of, or the consideration of how one feels or wants to have an opinion about the present moment being always late is also perfectly on time. Go figure.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, on its terms, not necessarily human imagination terms, but on its terms, it's always on time and has always left, is always leaving the station or long gone before we even give it the slightest consideration.
Well,
and yet, everything that's appearing can't be other than on time.
It's the transient daydreaming is, to me, there, you know, there's no difference between daydreaming in the mind versus imagining myself to be a person on Earth in this room.
Yeah.
Whatever, it's all the same. There's no actual... That's how I'm referring to daydreaming.
Yes, right.
So the transient daydreaming is all-encompassing. It's not like just an imagination daydreaming.
I mean, there seems to be a difference in terms of... You know, the texture or the effect of one seems, it appears to me, one is just this assumption that I've made.
Yes.
And the other is this active process.
Assumptions that you've made.
You know, this active process of conjuring. You know.
Here's, for the sake of argument, we sure understand the nuance of what you're referring to. And still, we can articulate, you could say, profound nuance with, you know, language or body language or, you know, the magnification of voice or hand gestures. You know, we animate what it is we think we're thinking, feeling, and then expressing. And we can do that with sometimes very confidently. I mean, I can kill, you know, 6 million Jews if I, you know, had a mind to. Not that I could, you know. But we've seen humans have the capacity to create such a force field of imagination and justifiable reality that everyone goes genocidal. Curious. It's curious, right? Like no one goes, I don't think so.
Well,
you know,
having seen that Scientology documentary.
Right.
I mean, I think of Tom Cruise up there, or that other guy, but mainly Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Doing exactly that. I mean, geez, that could have been Hitler. I mean, just it's so exuberant.
Well, David Miscavige,
yeah.
You know, is kind of, you know, when he's portrayed on film, you could, I don't want to say exactly what he looks like, but he could be mustachioid. We'll call it that.
Yeah, we love the new terms here.
I don't want to outright accuse him of being a genocidal maniac, but the fomentation of the persona is not unsimilar.
Yeah. No.
Not dissimilar. Yeah. Anyway.
But would
we don't want to get sued by anybody.
To be a person in a world really be any different?
No. It's yeah, it's all, the same. It's less violent.
We're all nuts. Consciousness
yeah,
is
I mean,
just really good at convincing itself that something's going on.
Yeah. Bada boom.
And it's
boom ba. You know, it's a rim shot. Every moment is a rim shot. Boom ba.
Wasn't this similar to the conversation we were having over at, what's his name, on Dorm? Remember that little party a couple years ago?
And somebody years ago.
Something. And somebody said, yeah, well, try stuffing in front of a bus.
Yeah, I was there. I remember that, yeah. That's right.
I mean, there are.
Well, that's just it.
Fuck yeah, I want a nice dream. I don't need to step in front of a bus.
You want a nice dream, yeah. No, of course. Yeah. Yeah, don't be an idiot. Don't step in front of a bus. Jump on board and find, you know, the woman of your dreams. You know, who happens to have an entire chocolate cake that she's willing to share with you. Now we're talking.
Yeah, she needs to keep it. Just keep her happy and we're good.
Yeah.
Keep the whole thing.
It's all kinds of ways to manage a relationship. Were we interested or capable of trying to reside, like our dear friend Baba Ram Dass suggests, in the so-called present moment, you would fail. And not because you're trying to be obstinate. You would fail because it's not possible to be durably present. Is has no problem being apparently durably present, even though it has no duration and only evaporates. So how good is at being
this is like the
present?
The
not
non,
so good.
What is it? The non what? Non exclusive. The non. You know, you can't know where something is and.
Yes, Heisenberg's uncertainty.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it seems similar. It's like
it is.
If you can identify it as, oh, then that's not it.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Well, sure. I mean, you can apply that same, you know, paradoxical insight to the intimate immediacy of your present experience. That's why I suggest if we could somehow trickle down to just present and have no reference or belief or superstition cluttering it up. What would you say about it? Not much. And so one way that consciousness fools itself into being other than itself is its, you know, effusive, expressive nature, which suggests that we in our experience have leapt beyond or out of the zone of I don't know what to call this. Now I've got plenty of things to call it. So if I've got plenty of things to say about this, I am living in transient imagination, where arguably it seems, though I haven't talked, interviewed everyone, most people, were there any, seem to dwell in transient imagination. The media suffers from it, and the packaging suffers from it, and the supermarket suffers from it, and every news report suffers. I mean, that's good luck. Good luck wiggling free from transient imagination. Except that you're always free of transient imagination. And not through any effort or vow or, you know, some kind of militaristic vipassana. Although that can be fun, you know. Burning through unbearable, seething pain because you haven't moved for an hour and 20 minutes, and you have somehow managed the willpower not to shake it off, burning with the unbearability of your own body. Wonderful. Now, only strange people are really interested in going the distance. Or piercing their pectoral muscles with sharp pins and being dangled, you know, while gazing into the sun. Oh. That sounds like a lot of fun, too.
Yeah. Like, with a really hot bath.
I don't know. Maybe I'd rather go to a rodeo.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. But the conflict, not that it is one, it's only suggestibility. If awareness, and we're not saying what that is or whether it belongs to you or you belong to it, that's already saying too much, but if this bizarritude of awareness actually could get jiggy enough so that it just chills, then it has really nothing to say about present experience. Because even though present experience remains irrefutably so and highly pixelated beyond imagination, you don't have a damn thing to say about it. Because it's so, you could say, circum-experientially immersive. I mean, saying I am that is like, that's a waste of time. I mean, we get it, you know. I mean, you know, rock and roll. But I am that, and that's too much. It's already too much. But we don't consciously, if we could call it that, dwell in the ongoing presentation of not actually having a word to say about this. Instead, we effuse, right? Because we have a lot to say. I mean, you know, everything that happened to me today, if I can remember a fraction of it, or shit that happened to me before today, if I can remember a fraction of that, how I hold myself as a person, the whole, you know, vocabulary and encyclopedic self-accusation that I'm suffering from in terms of what's wrong, what's right, what's missing, what did I lose, what do I regret, what poor decisions did I make, how do I right myself? I'm such a loser. How do I right myself? My life sucks. This went south. That went south. That person became unemployed. Someone I know is going to prison. Someone else I know took their own life because they couldn't stand it anymore. You know? Whoa! And what do we want? Let's say we were successful. Let's say you found a genie. You know, I don't know, could look like, what's her name? What was her name?
I dream a genie lady.
Eden.
Oh, Barbara Eden.
Barbara Eden. Could look like Barbara Eden. Oh, master. Genie. Why was he so, what's the word when you're just friends?
Oh.
A relationship
platonic?
Why were they so platonic? Was he married in the show? I don't remember.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, he was married?
That was his wife.
No, Jeannie was not his wife.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought so.
In the show? Oh, he portrayed her as his wife?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. They were together.
Oh, okay, so he portrayed
that was his mother-in-law was. Platonic. She was always cursing him.
Oh God, that's right.
And he like would go to business.
The mother-in-law,
meetings,
and she
he,
would
like,
pop
would
up
be
and
all fucked up.
Yeah, sweet. Could you imagine? It just seemed that they had a very platonic relationship.
Well,
I just
you know
TV back in the day.
TV back in the day. I mean, today he would be all over her.
Yeah. She could do magic, you know.
Well, anyway, let's say you found a genie, not like Barbara Eden, some you know, a man genie, or someone that was a
man
someone
a blue genie,
someone,
like
yeah, yeah, someone that you know didn't want to sleep with, yeah. A platonic genie, and that platonic genie.
I wish for a hotter genie.
The first thing you would do is wish for a hotter genie. Yeah, really.
That's not exactly what I had.
Are we platonic? No. Hotter. Give me hotter. Yeah. Get back in the bottle. Give me hotter.
Give me another bottle.
So let's say the genie. could grant your most profound wish for enlightenment, cessation of suffering, nirvana, right? The fulfillment of your persona, of all of your sense desires, wealth beyond measure. What would you go for? What would you go for? A hotter genie.
And then she'd start to get on your nerves. She'd be like, okay, hotter and less annoying.
Yeah. But it's a valuable question in that when we agonize over ourselves throughout the day or throughout the life, what the fuck do we want? What's it going to take? Who do I have to fuck around here to get what it is that I want? And what is it that I want?
But I will still get trapped constantly.
Uh-huh.
No matter, even though I sort of, you know, think that I know that.
Yeah, right. Right. You'll trap. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's not very easy to wiggle out of this transient presentation. Especially when we're complaining, which we do most of the time. You could say one of the most frequent relationship factors we have with the miracle of our lives turns out to be complaint.
It's a sense of injustice.
Injustice, disappointment, insufficiency, apprehension.
I think it's
control dramas, you know, narcissisms, which can become, you know, clearly dysfunctional. Yeah, that's how we're running this. That's how we're running this, you know, these tapes, this show, through complaint and regret and, you know, hopeful aspiration. But if you really try to pin it down on, hey, what do you really, 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 really want? And there's the genie, blue or hot. What would you ask for? Someone might say, you know, when the Kabbalah rabbi that I worked for years ago, Rabbi Berg, he would go on and on about, what is that when you live forever?
Immortality,
as if everyone was going to end up on some beach in the Bahamas turning grains of sand into cash and then living immortally. And some people would just put their paws up and go, tell me more, Rabbi. Uh-huh. You know, and I would look at him and go, I'm not getting it.
Yeah.
I love you, Rabbi. You wear a dress. Why shouldn't I? But I'm not seeing.
That's like the Jehovah's Witness, right?
Something was awry.
Your door. It's like,
something is awry at the Kabbalah Center. It's something like Shlomo Heinsberg with the wrench in the mikveh. You know, it's like Clue.
Yeah.
Right. Who killed the rabbi's son? Oh, it must have been Shlomo Steinberg with the candlestick and the mikvah. Something was wrong in River City. Is that where?
Yeah.
Right. Something's wrong in River City. Exactly right. That was a great tune, wasn't it? The whole lead up to that.
It's like the one all these magnets, if you're immortal and you get in some earthquake and you get trapped in the rubble and you're buried there for like 10,000 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That'd be great, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Sign me up.
Yeah. That would be a good one. Oh, that happened in one of those earthquake movies. To, what's his name? He played James Bond. Pierce Brosnan. Pierce Brosnan was in a real cool earthquake movie.
Was he immortal though, or he just got buried?
He deliberately, he was in a Jeep and he was rescuing his girlfriend and her kids and, you know, the grandmom walked them across the lake in a rowboat and it was like totally sulfuric acid and so she perished. And then they were able to drive across hot lava rocks straight into a mountain to basically be protected from the, you know, pyroclastic flows. And they had their beacon with them. So they were found and dug out.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. I don't know what that has to do with or anything, but I don't care.
You don't want to be immortal, man. That's it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's that. Go back to that. You really don't want to be immortal. And anyone that's trying to sell you immortal can't have woken up. What do I know? Or maybe you could say if there's no birth and there's no death, then
you already are immortal.
Then there is a quality of immortality already, you know, afoot.
Preserve a certain youthful state in a body that you imagine to be, you know what I mean, a certain way.
I would like to end up in a giant piece of amber.
Slow down
like
aging.
Yes. And then years from now, some like giant creatures that inhabit the earth could like, someone could wear me around their neck like a little amber pendant. You know?
All right.
Yeah.
Hope that happens for
you. I know. I hope it does happen.
Yeah, I'll say a prayer.
Thanks. Being a suspended animation inside of an amber.
Put that request into the genie.
Yeah. Genie, so I'm looking at it this way. Put me in a thing of amber, you know, in a suspended animation, so when the giants come to inhabit Earth, they can, like, wear me around their neck like a little pendant, and then one day I'll wake up, and then I'll be like a Gulliver.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did Gulliver...
I don't know who Gulliver
only ended up being a giant amongst the Lilliputians. Did he also end up being a midget amongst giants of his own kind?
I don't know that much.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who's Gulliver?
Gulliver's Travels? No. Jack Black.
Old book? No. Kids book?
I never really read or anything.
I was too busy coking.
Yeah. At an early age.
Shooting smack. I had no time. Mm-hmm. Where were we?
I was living my own Gulliver's
Travels. I was leaving my own Gulliver thing.
I was really interested in what other people were doing.
No. I mean, in order to get some purchase on this, it's like you have to keep convincing yourself that there's like, you know, there's like a reason to have this conversation. But wait, let's reel it back in. There's a context, there's a justification, but there's really not. Which is fun too. It kind of depends on, you know, who shows up and where it goes.
Yeah, that seems like my daily life in general, though, too. It's just this constant, bizarre, not really my life, but more my, I don't know, strange traversing through my consciousness or something.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's like this,
right.
Want to turn it into something, realize it's not something, turn it into something else, realize it's not that.
Yes.
So it's kind of exhausted. Like, okay.
You know, there's
really, really, really not about anything.
There's, you could say, amelioration of suffering, and then there's cessation. Amelioration is, let's say, you go to Christ, and Christ receives you, and you receive Christ. You have a hot reciprocity going on. But I don't mean in a prurient manner.
Well, Christ is hot. The real picture is to see of Jesus. Anyway.
Yeah.
Jesus is
like magic
dark hair,
like magic
blue eyes, tan. Yeah.
Right.
It's very good looking,
yeah.
Magic Mike.
Who's Magic Mike?
Christ as Magic Mike.
I'm confused.
Stripper.
Yeah.
Oh.
Channel I like him.
Yeah, meet Magic.
He never
meet
wears
Christ
his clothes
as Magic,
in all of Magic his things, Mike. So that would be an easy transition.
Yeah, you know.
Just wearing that little loincloth on the
could have
thing.
Been. Could have been.
Some of that.
I don't even want
so let's say by luck you have either sought Christ and Christ has come to you, or you weren't thinking about it and Christ came to you anyway. So you were, in a manner of speaking, born again in a, you know, in a very highly energized process of faith. Right? I mean, you were able to establish. I've never been able to, but you know, people have been able to establish a living, vibrant, affectionate, animate relationship with Christ as a presence in their life. Now that has got to amount to, I would hope, some meaningful amelioration of suffering.
What? Yeah.
That's how it's portrayed, right? When someone is excited about or has perfected or actualized that relationship by the grace of Christ, they've been permitted to receive Christ. That could look like a major win, major winning, amelioration of winning, amelioration of suffering.
Yeah, for sure.
And so a lot of us approach spirituality, you know, Buddhist and otherwise, kind of in that, from that same metaphor.
So many people sell it, like,
right? That we want to go, we want to go winning on this shit, which means, you could say, the gift, the grace of the cessation of fear or suffering. And maybe that looks like demonstrative faith, demonstrative ecstasy even, right? Yeah. I don't know. The reason I brought it up is to illustrate, you know, like one of the highest accomplished forms, demonstratively accomplished forms of the amelioration of fear and the amelioration of apprehension and the cessation of suffering would be, you know, an actualized relationship with Christ. And it could be with Allah. It could be with, you know, whomever, right? I mean, it could be with, you know, Suzanne Summers. Whoever. Whoever the deity is that you want to take you home. Tommy Chong.
There's somebody that I have in mind that sort of epitomizes that in the best way, really, in the best way.
You know someone like that?
Kind of, yeah.
Wow.
Just somebody that like one of friends. I think of her like that.
Yeah.
She's pretty old and been around a long time and
I love those people.
And she just,
which is a lie. It really pissed me off because I fail at that, at actualizing.
But she
that.
Just has this depth about her, and it doesn't matter if you believe what she believes or not. To her, it seems, you know, she's perfect.
Why would she care? You perfect intimacy in Christ.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, but she's
you're rolling.
She's kind of, she will use the terminology, but she's way beyond the terminology.
Nice.
You know, it's
real nice.
I mean, most
why don't you invite her here to speak?
I tell you.
Why not? I don't know if she's, you know.
She's not a speaker per se.
Yeah, right. She's just a lucky, quiet, enlightened soul.
Yeah, I've been on committees with her and stuff like that. When I was into the friends meeting.
Yeah, on the boiler, you know, the gas versus the oil boiler.
No, but the worship and ministry committee, we didn't deal with that, thank God.
So that was one thing, you know, the amelioration of suffering and the approaches that we take to accomplish, to cultivate the amelioration of suffering. And I think that, you can't qualify anyone else's experience, it's not possible, but in my own failed attempts at that kind of, you know, hopeful deliverable, it hasn't worked. Absolute failure. With some degree of, you know, sincere attempts. Then from time to time it strikes you that there's this other amelioration of suffering, which is not contingent upon a self that has suffered that is now no longer suffering. Mm. There's this other fucking thing going on.
Or that has some kind of tool that it can utilize to
of course.
Get through the world and learn about itself
or
something.
That includes the tools, right? So what's this other thing? Well, if the imagination of a self, you know, as a durable, born, corporeal entity, doesn't get any purchase in the first place.
Yeah. Where are you going?
You know.
Well, you have to, it seems like you have to inhabit something for it to really take flight.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, consciousness is. We're just inhabitors, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, we want to blame everything on consciousness just to keep it kind of, you know, clean. Even though that's not, you know, true. But let's say we'll blame it all, you know, blame it all on the bossa nova, blame it all on the consciousness as having the capacity to inhabit and then appear to splinter from its own unafflictable nature. As a creature, as a disparate, individuated, elemental.
Another Big Bang, just one of the Google Plus.
A big pain in the ass. I had turned out to be a big pain in the ass, right?
Yeah, right.
The reflexive nature. Through which or as which I interface with the irrefutability or the miraculous irrefutability of experiencing can be a total pain in the ass as felt or insisted upon through the filter of, right, individuation. And individuation is not a given. It's not a fact.
It has to be inhabited.
Well, individuation and inhabitation are, you know, more or less the same metaphor. And you can't really find the genesis whereby a unafflictable unicity, which an unparsable, unafflictable unicity says, bada boom.
No, there's fractal inhabitation. So there's like you inhabiting you as yourself, and then inhabiting you as a commentary on yourself, and then you inhabit you.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's like,
yep.
It just blows up and
nobody
knows.
Yeah.
Well, so.
Yeah, inhabitation turns out to be a profusion, not just one thing.
Not like the legitimate thing. It's like this chair over here. You're just like, you know, I just kind of feel like I'm a dude in here doing things. And like,
yeah, that'd be nice.
I really put my finger on it, but
right.
I'm here. Yeah, I'm sure of it. Yeah, this is how we do things.
Yeah, right. Well, that sense of certainty, of self-accusation as a creature, as an individual, you know, as a gender, as a religion, as a certain skin color, blah, da 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 da. Suggests, right, the, you know, the birth and actualization of individuation. And individuation is a mesmer. and that it seems to occur, it's not that individuation is accompanied by suffering. It is. It is suffering because of its partiality, because of its transient nature, because it's hypothetical and arbitrary.
It's just another aspect of it.
It is entirely an aspect of, yeah.
I mean, all we can say is aspects of. I mean, you know, I mean, we can't come up with a term that this is all encompassing.
Yes.
I am suffering incarnate.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And those are the same. Incarnate is suffering. Individuation is suffering. identification with transience as suffering. And we would like to blame it on circumstances and events. And so if my life goes south, then I know why I'm disappointed.
Please pray for me so it doesn't go south.
Yeah, and then I might offer, you know, request, RF, put out an RFP that this doesn't go south. Well, it's too late. It's too late. You're so south, you're walking with penguins.
This is a good part. We're just in the Iceland.
But that's most of the lamentation that we hear or have participated in. Is please don't let this go south or any farther south. I can hardly bear the temperature now. Yeah. And all of that, you know, clamoring occurs in and as the myth of individuation. It could be, might be possible that one could be struck dumb or struck smart and released from the conviction of individuation.
Well, that's what one wonders about, especially, you know, when you hear somebody like Hederman talk about it. It's like, well, I feel like, well, what choice do we have? it's like, well, you know, don't, it's like that sense of authorship thing. It's like, but here we are, you know, I mean, it's.
I hear you. I get it. Yeah. The irrefutability, you cannot shake off the irrefutability.
Yeah.
However, the involuntary conundrum of individuation can abate, can cease. Yeah. You know, why would the Buddha have made such a big stink if it weren't possible? There would have been no Buddha if it weren't possible. Right? Yeah. Oh. As we explore the, can I say, rapidity, frequency, and adroit nature of consciousness identifying with itself and therefore, or consciousness identifying as other than itself and appearing, right, to suffer from individuation, as we explore it, which somehow we have the capacity to do. I mean, our innate, call it intelligence, or animate nature, wild nature, can actually explore the rhythms and the moods and the boundary fields of what it seems to be incarcerated or incarcerable. That we can explore it is actually profound evidence that we're not incarcerated. But we're not convinced yet. Right, so we might spend a couple thousand decades, you know, as in two or a thousand decades, applying ourselves to getting out from under the myth of individuation. Yeah, and we tend to underestimate just how amazing it is that we can participate in that adventure in the first place. That you can turn or somehow tune or give attention to the profundity of yourself on an adventure to discover the nature of yourself. That's the shit. So what's the deliverable then? I mean, if you could go to the corner Wawa, you know, and say, hey, Gotama, what's the deliverable? Right? Help me out.
Well, the guy asked Adyashami, like, you know, if you could go back and tell yourself, like, whatever, 10 years ago, we're going to, like, some, like, three things of advice, what would it be? And
that's
like,
cool. Nice
like,
question.
Don't worry, already there, nothing you can do will help, and, you know, screw the third one, because it's not going to do anything.
Yeah, and I'll pass on the third one.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, this is great, yeah. Real useful.
Mm. It may be possible that a certain quality of confidence can simply come upon you, which unrivets you from, derivets you from individuation and spiritual or psychic malnourishment. And places you abruptly or gently or whips you off a cliff into not self. And here this is. I mean, really, here it is. Here's not self. There's vegan chocolate cake. Is that something that might
be vegan?
It's vegan chocolate cake.
Oh, okay. I kept that part a secret because, like, it was really good. And now that I know it's vegan.
You want to have another? Yeah. Vegan chocolate cake. It works. Vegan chocolate cake. The pressure, again, the involuntary pressure of. Sure. Of the involuntary pressure of responding to the irrefutability of present experience from the vantage point of a creature blows. Sucks whale dick. That's how badly it blows. And it turns out that just as spontaneously and involuntarily uninvited, the pressure of selfhood occurs, so does the absolute cessation of it occur.
But we have to wait till we die.
Press the bus.
Some do. I don't know. I mean, you could say the adventure of a lifetime, the dharmic adventure of a lifetime is answering or that question. Do I have to wait until I fucking die? Or can I get a little piece of that ass before I perish, right? Thank you very much. Vegan, man. This is like... Animal free.
I always eat at 7, so like I come here like full. But I like
chocolate cake.
Oh, God.
God, it's so animal free.
Oh, man.
How do I get some of that? Chicken, potatoes, and steak.
Wow.
I know. So my brother is, I don't get it. I bring him chocolate. He's like, what is this shit? I'm like,
Goodness.
I know.
What a wonderful ailment to have.
Well, it's like training, too. Like, if you just stop eating, like, food like that, you lose your taste for it.
Yeah, you're right. I should.
No, I tried that. It didn't work.
I tried it, too.
Give it a couple of years.
There's too many temptations.
And you can't be, like, hungry, either. Like, I eat, like, a lot. So, like, I'm not, like...
You work hard, right?
Hungry every
day.
Hi. I was in quietude, so I'm going to come over here. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, we were just having, like, a food discussion.
Yeah,
real important.
That's right.
Would you like a slice of vegan apple cake? Chocolate cake.
Chocolate apple.
Vegan chocolate cake.
I really ain't come over here for food.
But we have some.
It's little.
I would come over here just for food.
And admit it.
And admit it.
I would admit it.
And complain when there aren't any and not bring any. Contribute.
There's no animal products in the cake.
Chocolate is not an animal product.
Chocolate's not an animal.
Eggs and milk or something, okay.
I mean, chocolate rabbits are chocolate. They're not animals.
It's probably sugar and maybe some kind of weird seaweed product or something.
No.
That's soy milk or something. Horrible.
Agar, agar. Is that how you say it? Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird
agar,
food.
Agar?
Yeah, there you go.
Agar.
Agar.
I remember a line from the Crucible. I played Judge Danforth in high school. Children, a very agar bit will now be turned into your souls.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a different agar.
Different agar.
That's a different agar.
Yeah.
The long, pointy metal one.
Yeah. That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, he was putting everybody on notice.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm not fucking around with this witch shit anymore.
You're going to break your legs if you don't care. On you, right? You're going to twist them off.
You're
going
to break your leg if you're not careful.
That's ridiculous. I can't believe it.
It's the same as sitting the other way. It's just a different, same thing.
I don't think it's me flexible to do that.
I'm really little.
Yeah. Were you enjoying the quiet meditation?
Yeah, it was actually quite refreshing.
Oh, tonight was meditation night?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
How's that cake? Is that refreshing?
It's actually really
good. It's very good.
A cake with no eggs in it.
And it's good, mm-hmm. I know. It's weird.
Oreos are vegan.
No.
Those things are evil.
No, they're totally evil.
Something's wrong with those things.
And they're going to dip them in milk, too.
Addicting. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's cocaine.
Something's really wrong with those things.
Yeah.
Feel horrible after eating a whole lot.
Yeah, but you can't
stop.
Yeah,
but you forget. Yeah. That's the whole idea. Present experience is chock full of freedom. It's a heavenly coffee. And it is easily infiltrated or punctuated by an endless loop of self-referencing. Which seems to occupy the entirety of our first-hand experience, which is transient hallucination. So it takes a certain impetus, most likely a magical impetus, to break the spell of the spell of being someone or something in the first place. So if we try to use the circumloquacious reflex of mind to break out of the Mobius strip of mind, well, we continue to find ourselves in the same spot.
I love that cul-de-sac with no outlet metaphor's kind of great. You're just in a cul-de-sac with no outlet. But meanwhile, it's like you could just walk across someone's lawn. It's like... there's not actually no outlet. It's just...
well, that's the...
it's a fig Newton of your imagination.
Turns out to be a fig Newton of your imagination. Did you ever have, like, blueberry fig Newtons? Or
yes. In fact, I did. I think today.
You had one today? A blueberry fig Newton?
Well, a raspberry.
A raspberry
blueberry fig? Early, I think you get raspberry, blueberry, and fig. Of all things, fig.
Oh, even a fig one. Yeah, the original fig Newton.
I think they're all fig, but then one.
Flavored. Yeah. That's the original.
I got a big shitload of them at Costco.
You didn't bring any?
I packed, put one in my lunch.
What?
That's why you came here to laugh.
You can't laugh over there. People take themselves too seriously.
Yeah, they walk.
They're on a mission from God. Here, we are God. Fuck the mission. Burn down the mission. Ebony and ivory live together in perfect. Once you've gone black, you never go back.
Like a beautiful Oreo cookie.
I like this. This is like LSD. It's good. Woo, woo, woo. Really?
Or
I'm sorry. Is this like a spiritual talk? Oh yeah, yeah. Definitely, definitely. Yeah, we're on our way. Godspeed. Godspeed to enlightenment. To infinity and beyond. Well, you can see the traditional importance or role of what's referred to as transmission. Because left to our own devices, we're in, right, the cul-de-sac of self. We loop in a Möbius strip of self-referencing.
Get out of the goddamn cul-de-sac.
That's a good one. I think people will understand it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Now, it turns out we're always out. Absolutely always out. But the referential nature, the repetitive and referential nature, the identification with irrefutability as self appears to be very formidable, very demanding. You know, the hypnosis of self becomes the default. one can wonder, not that most people we know do wonder, but one can wonder, how did the hallucination of self turn out to be the default?
It's a habit. I mean, it starts the day you're born, enculturation.
Maybe.
And we just take it on.
Well, see, this is one of the ways it fools us into thinking that it's more formidable than it actually is. Because once I suggest that the habit of, you know, incarceration is associated with my conception or my birth or acculturation and inoculation, then I think that I'm the product of that for...
Yeah, now you've got, you know, 50 or 30 years of shit to unravel and unwind.
Right. And even Jay Krishnamurti would, you know, I mean, he spoke for 50 years, you know, or more, actually. Yeah, 50 or more years. I mean, he traveled the world and spoke, so you could, he said a bunch of stuff, you know. Some of it repeated, some of it, you know, of course, morphed, yeah. But he would from time to time, at least in earlier works, make the point that your consciousness is harkens back to, you know, thousands of years of conditioning, right? I mean, as a neocortex that's organized the world in an adversarial manner, you know, you're the product of these thousands of years of conditioning. And so it had a certain kind of poetic, you know, bada boom. But you could, in another way, you could say that's absolute heresy. Because conditioning doesn't have 10,000 years to rely upon. The genesis of associating with irrefutability through the filter of a transient nature occurs just now. It doesn't fucking matter how many thousands of years this may have been, quote, going on amongst the apparent species of human. You see, you're not really on the receiving end or the suffering end of a long tradition of absolute stupidity.
Well, that's like very materialistic.
It feels the opposite.
You're back to
It feels like the opposite.
You're back to a real materialistic view that you're a person living on a planet with a culture and a society that has history.
Well, when you read the work of Jay Krishnamurti, which is, you know, poignant and revelatory, a lot of it was delivered from that within the context of the misery and failure of humanity to wake the fuck up.
Delivered that way, though. Climate change, environmental issues,
yeah.
Everything. I'm like, it's all the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the hallucination runs deep.
It's not really talking about exploring itself as itself for fun.
Let the river run.
Left out.
Little Carly Simon lighting things up.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty good, actually.
So the you know, one of the magical elements that you can bring to bear is here this is. How fucked up is it?
It seems like what it takes is an interruption of that whole flow.
Yeah.
You know, somehow it has to be an interruption of
all
this jazz, you know.
Yeah, right. In one respect, interruption is...
I mean, that's just a practical...
Is valid as an observation, right? And interruption can also be misleading.
Yeah.
Because all that you ever have is... unencumbered nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're in the throes of one thing or another.
Yes, in the throes.
It doesn't feel that way.
Well, it's strange. Of course, I appreciate what you mean by it doesn't feel that way. But that's a convenience or an inconvenience of looking back.
Yeah.
See how crafty it is? That's why it's fun to look at the possibility that the genesis of incarceration has no history, has no past, that truly, I say unto thee, brothers and sisters, if you're fucked up, that's conjured in situ. It actually has no past. If you're fucked up with self, and we all know how that feels, it's being conjured at present. Even though it can feel thick and gnarly and, you know, of the nature of momentum. Yes.
But how do you remember all those things that seem to be from the past and bring into the present?
Well, the remembering is doing you, right? You're not doing it.
Okay.
I mean, doesn't memory just show up absolutely impersonally and spontaneously as an element in your experience? Yes, but even, yes, of course, but look at it. Even the impulse to do a hard drive seek, to recall something that might be of value, whether to tell a story or to find your keys, you know, maybe the first time you got lucky, you have to do a hard drive seek, hoping that the electro, chemo, piezo quality of memory provides you with a palatable answer. And then you say, oh yeah, that's how it happened. It's like John Lovitz, you know, saying, yeah, yeah, you know. Remember that character, you know, who was always lying or not lying, or, you know,
that guy.
Morgan Fairchild, you know, Morgan, with whom I've slept, you know.
Yeah,
he was always, yeah,
that's the ticket.
That's the ticket persona was a great, great spoof on how we convince ourselves that what's being remembered is true, or it's a record of what's true.
And that you know how it started.
But it appears as though.
It does appear as though.
Muck up the present.
Yeah, okay, yes. So, right, one aspect of memory, if it's not where are my fucking car keys, or worse, where are my fucking cigarettes, could be.
You gotta get one of those little eye tiles.
Memory can also be the uninvited irritabilities of the regrets of my entire life, mm-hmm. The embarrassments and regrets of my entire life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're like, fuck, leave me alone. I know I'm a dick. I mean, I get it, I'm a dick, but do I have to be reminded right now? You know, I mean, how many horrible things have I said to how many people that looked at me, you know, with a big vampire cross and said, get thee behind me, Satan. Yeah, it's bad. It's terrible. And all of that, the emotion, the blood gas, the pH, right? The vibration of the entirety of the present reenactment of memory is appearing impersonally, spontaneously in present experience. Even the impulse to remember, could you say it's your impulse? It's not. What the fuck are we in charge of?
I can say it's my impulse.
You can. Look at it. All I would say, I'm not going to talk you out of it. I hear you. You know, that's as good as true as you need to make it. But look at the profundity of the spontaneity of what's arising in your present consciousness, darting about, that seems to be causal for what it is that you remember next, think next, feel next, do next, decide next. But it's not causal. You are appearing improvisationally. It's true. Not everyone is willing to admit it or investigate it, because that even might be more terrifying or worse than losing your cigarettes. But just check it out. It's like, fuck, this is absolutely appearing improvisationally. How is it that we take it so seriously to the point of injury or any other psychiatric or spiritual affliction when it is clearly appearing involuntarily and improvisationally?
So we take ownership of it.
That's why Wayne calls it the false sense of authorship. Yeah, that's a metaphor. But even this so-called taking authorship is likewise appearing improvisationally and spontaneously.
Can't stop thinking that, man. Try to force it.
Let's say one's sense of self is merely the recognition of this fucking shitstorm that is appearing improvisationally. That's all that self amounts to. Could it simply be the observation that the hellish shitstorm of me is appearing improvisationally and impersonally. And acausally, which is even weirder. That's all. So that's it. That's ego. Let's say everyone's got a big ego. That's terrific. You know, hands up, hold them high, big ego. But all we're saying is the recognition that a shitstorm is appearing in your consciousness improvisationally. So, why so much suffering associated with the irrefutable presentation of improvisational consciousness? Ouch. Why the ouch? Why such a big ouch? How is it that what we refer to as identification turns this fucking loser, shitstorm motherfucker into someone so apparently solid that there's a big ouch? Beats me. I don't know. But if we can tickle or harness, you could say each other's, not there's a, that there's an each or another, the strange emanation of awareness and consciousness itself simply considering itself, something has come unglued. I'm here to give testimony that if you are giving the slightest bit of attention to the biomechanics, the psychomechanics of the presence of your irrefutable presentation, something has come unglued. You're fucked. You're going down. Because you have been, whether you like it or not, whether you chose to or not, you have become decoupled from the apparent solidity of your improvisational nature. Here's a lovely metaphor. Up, we're under the circus tent, and up in the center ring are the most incredible trapeze artists doing death-defying leaps, spins, curls, catches, and the audience is going insane. And the clowns are taking the bow.
Good Lord.
That's what you are, you fucking clowns. You've got a big fucking red nose, and your hair is like zippity doo dah. You've got polka dot, white and black polka dot silk on, and a giant red tie. Your shoes are the size of barges, and you're bowing, and no one is applauding for you. And we don't even know it.
Maybe I can just bow a little harder.
Bow a little harder.
Yeah.
Try to get it going.
I just feel like it's all on automatic. Everything's automatic.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody else, but I always get that feeling that it's all automatic, you know? Things are happening. If you want to call it a sort of a inherent intelligence of everything.
Yeah, you can make it sound cool.
You know, whatever. But it's just happening. And is that what we are? Is that what I am? Just happening? If it's happening, then that ain't it.
Isn't it a curious enterprise to see what might be available in your present experience as a magical power to consider what the fuck you might be? And no matter what conclusion you may come up with, you are a bowing clown. what if you might possibly be whatever it is that this is? Without genesis, without consequence. And all that appears to be appearing improvisationally, impersonally, spontaneously, non-durably, including the banality of self and suffering, turn out to be nothing at all. So we don't replace one mistaken identity for an improved mistaken identity. This, whatever this is or isn't, might likely persist, who's to say, sans identity.
Yeah.
Could be. Where the revelation of unicity itself says, oh, I thought I was a thing, on the lookout for trying to be a less suffering thing, but it turned out, I'm not a thing.
It's like, and then, well, let me try that again. That was sort of interesting. Let me try that again.
Mm-hmm.
That thing.
Yeah, it's like a thing. Silence, as it may be referred to in yogic literature or yogic culture, is not the absence of sound. Mm-hmm. Silence is the absolute cessation of any identity.
Mm. I noticed.
That sends chills through so many people.
That what?
That just sends chills through so many people, I can imagine. If you're wrapped up in identity.
Well, not everyone wants to be the Borg.
Oh, yeah.
Resistance is futile.
That doesn't make it any better.
No, it doesn't. The Borg! That's a Star Trek thing. That's a Star Trek thing. Captain Picard and Data and friends and Number One had to battle it out with the Borg.
The Borg were like
assimilable. It was the Borg was a completely impersonal, assimilable consciousness that melded flesh and machine into a single will. Until, of course, in the movie when the Borg was anthropomorphized by the She-Bitch.
Oh.
The She-Bitch, mind of the Borg.
Oh.
She cajoled and seduced Data into her conscious field.
Oh.
And he was able to convince her that he had become loyal to her, that he was assimilable. Oh. But he was not human. Data was a cyborg of some kind. I'll be back. And that's how they defeated her.
Wow. Okay. I don't remember all that.
That was the full length. One of the full-length Star Trek movies.
Maybe,
yeah. Oh, it was good.
The old one.
Yeah, well. Yeah. It was good. Yeah. But that was the downfall of the... You could say that was the downfall of the fear the shock value of Borg consciousness lost its fearsomeness when it became anthropomorphized in her character, because before she showed up on the scene, the Borg was truly vague. It was just the purely vague impulse of assimilable a power that nothing and no one could refuse. That's scary. But as scary as that is,
no controlling center.
That's what this is. This is that scary Borg. Yeah, that's what this is. It's the scary Borg. You've already been assimilated. You just don't know it yet.
There you go. Oh, good Lord.
It's freaky, huh?
Yeah.
It's a freaky, because you get really like, wait a second, you don't want to go Borg if you can help it. You don't want to be assimilated into Borg mind. You lose the patina and the thrill of your individuation. You wouldn't give that up for anything. Not even Genie.
Well, it wouldn't matter at that point. Like, so, well, then why give it up? And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
you want to enjoy it.
So when you look at the tenacity, the apparent tenacity of consciousness on the move, right? Consciousness identified, incarcerated, individuated. You can see how it really loves to cling and enjoy, like sucking the marrow from the bone every moment that it's got through the imagination of, right, selfhood or individuation. Well, we're already more full of shit than we need to be.
Yes.
So it's probably good that there's metabolic
this,
movement.
And all of this and these things of consciousness.
Yeah, yeah.
Or on the flip side, people who are so full of themselves and their identity and really incarnate.
I know one of those. I know one of those.
Whatever. You know, kill myself because you're still going to poop.
Yeah. Like, well, that's right. Yeah. You have to poop and maggots will eat your intestines.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good advice. The only one that could take it is you. Some days we take the advice, right? We chill out from the force field of ourselves, right? The seriousness of ourselves, the agenda. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, some days we're released from ourselves. Most days we're not, you could say. And everyone we meet certainly is, except for this lovely woman that you know from the, you know, Gwynedd Friends, are, you know, full of themselves. I mean, when I first came to this illustrious institution referred to as Pebble Hill Church, the person that I met happened to be the president of council at the time, and he introduced himself, no shit, as the most spiritual person at Pebble Hill. I don't want to say it. This is being recorded and broadcast.
No. Hey, none of those people listen to this, believe me.
I know. Not a problem. But I was like, oh, really?
Even if they did.
So happy to meet you.
They would have disconnected about, I don't know, how long has this been going on? 5 minutes into it?
So it's like, I was like.
An hour and a half ago?
I feel so pleased and, you know, privileged to have met the most spiritual person, you know, in the institution. What a fortuitous gift. Of course, it went downhill from there, but it was a good start.
Yeah.
Is a good start. Well, when Rabbi Berg, you know, told me in quiet quarters how important he was to the world at large, I was like, he was my employer. I had to say, yes, Rabbi. Watch me. I'm really good at this. Yes, Rabbi. See?
I mean,
you can't find not an iota of wry humor or doubt in my presentation. Watch. Yes, Rabbi. I had to practice it. Oh, I'm happy to share it with you.
Right, but now I can see if I'm right when you get up that competition.
You're right. That was like not a trick question or anything. Anyway, where were we? What were we talking about?
The good part.
Oh, the Borg? No, we passed that. That's gone. Anything else?
What was the good part? I forget.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good part? Yeah, but let's bring it back.
forget.
Bring back the good part.
Yeah. Now, I was going to say, you were talking about people like not wanting to like give up their identity.
Yes.
I hate to like bring it up again, but like the ISKCON girl like literally said, like,
right.
I don't want to, like, you know, I've been down that whole, like, Zen side of things. Like, I don't want to be, like, some impersonal nothingness, you know.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, that's, marry her. She's
probably more honest than me. Cause I'm like, oh, I want that, except we're not doing that, so I guess I don't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I want it, but I'm, like, I haven't found even the littlest, slightest hint of success.
I'm comfortable over here. I know what this is, so.
Yes.
Continue.
Yes, continue. Please continue. That's probably the thing that's on our refrigerator that we dare not write down. Please continue.
Yeah.
Please continue just being just as miserable as you are right now. You're doing a great job. Yeah.
Oh, the desperate prayer. Just make it worse. Just make it so much worse that I want to quit, actually.
Yeah, it will. It will. It's listening. It's coming for you. Don't worry about it. It has no objection to fucking you up so bad.
I feel like that's the only way I'll get through.
Welcome to the club. Welcome to the club. That's right. That's right. Occasionally a rare creature comes through that, you know, somehow born to the right parents, under the right planets, that just flows with the breeze, and they hear a certain kind of a message, and they're like, I'm down with that. Most of us, it's just a really painful carving process. Yeah. Ouch. Ooh. Son of a gun. Ow.
One more time. Let's just try it again.
Yeah, let's try that again.
Are you sure it's not just a little bit about something?
Yeah. Please, can't this be just a little bit about something? Something that's happening to me? Please.
You just keep making it more abstract.
Yeah.
What about this?
Yeah. Well, you know how clever this is and how evasive this is. You know, you can see maybe you've gone to public talks where someone is talking to an enlightened guy or an enlightened woman, or, you know, having a full-on a philosophical thing, and you can see how clever, right, mind is, how evasive and darting, and, you know, it brings something up and then it runs over here and brings something up, and it just never really wants to go under the light. It doesn't want to go under the flashlight of you're fucked, you're not real. It will not submit to you're fucked, you're not real. It'll just keep, right, splashing paint all over the place to continue to draw attention to itself so as to avoid the great assimilation. Yeah, so we have to be tricked. We have to be tricked. And so, you know, the Dzogchen master, one tradition of many, having gone through the catharsis themselves, right, and having come to a certain quality of inner transparency, can, you could say, deploy that to fool others, right, to trick others through the imaginary membrane of the refusal of assimilation. That's how this works. That's another metaphor for transmission, right? Yeah. You're being fooled through the imaginary portal where you think that you're refusing assimilation. Now, that might look like Marpa teaching Milarepa how to get his shit together by doing a million repetitive acts that he had to do over and over and over and over again to whittle his pride down to zippity fucking doodah. And so that's a, you know, a great story in the literature of watching prideful refusal. And in this case, Milarepa had been a wizard and a magician and a homicidal one. I mean, his karmic, you know, report card was not good. It's not like he should have really been high up on the chain of, you're next, you're batter up for enlightenment. Right, no. But Marco was like, this guy saw me. And so he whittled him down to fucking dust. But as much as that was the skill of Marco's, you know, presentation or tricking Milarepa into absolute submission. Milarepa had the stuff to do it, had the affection and the trust, dare I say, the love of the master and the master's hand to submit himself to it. So it was a big love affair. Underneath the story, it was really a love affair. That Mark Milarepa had the cojones to submit himself to that whittling down process. Otherwise, we become prideful and deceitful and self-preservational and bail. Right? Don't we? We tend to bail. But that's fine. I mean, that goes on for as long as it goes on. It's not like you can really interfere with it, you know? If the impulse comes to bail, you bail. If the impulse comes to submit yourself, then you submit yourself. It's just karma, right? It's timing. That's how this goes. And the entirety of it, regardless of the metaphor and the stories and the great traditions that we can borrow from, the punchline is here. The punchline is this. The punchline is now. And you do have the miraculous capacity to peer right, you could say, at the tip of your nose and watch consciousness conjure in situ. Watch consciousness conjure right here. And if you can see that, even if it's just for a few seconds, and it's actually better that it's a quick glimpse than a lengthy one, because as a quick glimpse, there's confidence, if you will, in a quick glimpse of seeing consciousness conjure presently. Before thought kicks in to tell a story or a justification or an explanation, you're like, holy fuck, this dreams. And you can look at where your consciousness goes from moment to moment. What solicits and fills your attention? What storyline and what reflex and what memory and what impulse for the body or the emotion keeps coming at you, right? Like fucking snowflakes on a windshield at night. I mean, you know, the snowflakes are coming at you and it's blinding. You can't see the road because the snowflakes are hitting your windshield and your headlights are reflecting off the snowflakes and you are fucking blinded. You cannot make heads or tails of the road. You're absolutely blinded, and that's a great illustration for how clever, how fast, how subtle, how engrossing consciousness is as it conjures itself from moment to moment. You're like, it's worse than a deer in headlights. You're overwhelmed to the point of absolute confusion, having no idea what this is. That's the fact. Right now, even though this may be apparently stable, this is snowflakes on a windshield. So what we call mind, you could say, is this curious and strange capacity of trying to make sense or impose sense on top of absolute overwhelm.
Well, it seems like when there's contrast that you can pick out a pattern, so to speak.
Yes.
Where, I mean, because, okay, so in a practical sense, we're buying this house, okay?
Yes.
And my mind keeps going to that every once in a while. And so I got this thing, you know, this is probably several things, but there's that, there's a dominant thing. And so I might go spin it off for a second or two, then I come back here. And then I go spin it off because I'm thinking about projects and all this crap. And when you see this dynamic, boom, boom, boom,
right,
then you start saying, what's going on here? You know?
Yeah.
And then just this whole apparition right here.
Yeah.
Everything starts to get questioned, you know?
Yep. Well, it's the natural propensity of call it consciousness, even though there is no such thing, as it releases from the grip of its own hallucination to become diffuse. And as it becomes diffuse, then the assertion of pattern recognition relaxes.
Yeah.
And so name and form don't become nearly as, and including imagination, of course, don't become as compelling as they were as in a second ago.
Yeah.
And then you start to drop into the self-immersive nature of diffuse, non-focused attentivity. And then this is a plasma, right? You're a disembodied plasma of unadulterated affection. That's what the fuck you are. Oh, I like being that. Why didn't you say so in the first place? and that's the assimilation, you see? Being assimilated into Borg is the recognition that you are disembodied affection. Apparently floating in a plasma of undifferentiable fucking bliss. That's the assimilation. I don't know why we're putting up such a fight.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Borg is the best fight to put it.
I know. Yeah, I know. Kind of deliberate.
Yes, I know. It's funny.
Yeah. But it is the same, you know, it's the same culture. It's the release of self-will.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the release of self-determinism. Yeah, but well, as much as it's a loss,
yeah,
right, one could convey it as the great finding. It's the great suicide and the great rebirth. It's the great assimilation and the great, right, void.
It's the splitting open.
That's what one is up against. Because the fucking thing is transhuman. Because human is an idea. When you go to the, call it the root, the permeability of, at the actual nature of experiencing, it's a cacophony of blessed confusion. A cacophony of blessed, ambiguous, causeless, destination-free confusion. But in the midst of that, the confusion part burns off like a good reduction sauce. And what are you left with? Call it what you will. You name it, because it's yours. If I might refer to it as disembodied affection, you know, so that could be a tickling metaphor that might please you for a moment or two, but you have to call it what you see, what you feel, right? Because it's you, it's yours. Nirsagadatta said, I am that. I say, I am fat. Call yourself what you will. Well, if he was that, how could I be that? That's taken. You have to come up with some other thing to be. I am bored.
What was his name? Godman? Was that the guy who wrote? No, that's. I'm getting the.
There is a Godman.
It was a Feynman, or I forget what the author.
Maurice Friedman.
Friedman
was the principal, right?
Right.
Editor.
I mean, that was his.
I am that.
That was his word. I mean, I mean, he's the one that titled the book, I think, isn't he?
I am that, not quite that. I am that I am that I am not quite that.
He's definitely not fat.
Yeah, but he wasn't fat.
If you said, probably. I am fat, he's like, oh yes, I am that.
What time is it? Jesus, this party is over. 9:30. hey, thanks for coming. Really glad you were here.